fest. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around. Ayo's house
in the middle of our street.
Ayo's house
in the middle of
Isle's House, episode 6, the Gen Z edition. I'm outnumbered with Jack and Greeny here. No Rocco this week, but he'll be back next week. Gentlemen, what's going on? I believe we just went over this since we last recorded. The Islanders are 1-1-2, which, as Jack noted, is the most Islanders stretch of hockey of all time. So let's talk about it. We got some good questions. We'll talk about what we like, what we don't like, and what's going on. Jack, why don't you kick us off?
What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Isle's House here. I guess we can kick it off with what we do like so far. How about our boy, Maxim Siplikov? Guy's got 10 points in his first 18 games in the NHL. The second line is absolutely humming. Ethan has to be a little bit sweaty about his Nelson prop right now. I'm not sure.
Not as sweaty as you are about your Varlamov award bet. Yeah,
I don't think we're sweating that one anymore. I think we already I think we already took the L on that one.
That was a quick loss.
Yeah,
it was a quick one. But yeah, I'm really liking what I'm seeing out of this kid. And to kick us off on a positive note, I just love what I'm seeing from him. The only flaw in his game so far is taking these really bad timing penalties. But other than that, I mean, what a great fit he's been on the second line. And he's really helped us keep our head sort of above water through all these injuries so far. What do you guys think?
Yeah, really like what I'm seeing from KG Lee. And speaking of KG Lee, the Lee Surgeons, or as I've been calling it, the Redurgents. Greeny seems real happy about that. This may be some of the best hockey I've seen Anders Lee play in the last 3 to 4 years. I'd say
that's just fair.
Pleasantly surprised by the lack of a regression out of him. I think maybe we can chalk up last year to coming off the injury, and it's become more apparent with some of the media reports that he put in a ton of work this offseason, and it seems to be paying off. Thrilled with him, thrilled with Pageau. They've been carrying the team since Barzal went down, since Duclair went down, since they've suffered a number of injuries, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Well, we have to give credit to Adam Oates, because I think Rocco would kill us if we didn't mention him. So yeah, Anders Lee worked with Adam Oates, and he's been a pleasant surprise. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel, but like every time I watch him, I'm just waiting for him to like revert back to the Anders Lee that we've seen from like the last 3 years.
But the thing is, though, it's crazy. The foot speed is sort of there.
It's like weird.
Relative to him.
No, it's very weird watching it, because like you don't expect him to have that kind of speed and acceleration, but like he does. So it's just kind of weird.
He's playing out of his bird right now. He's got 7 goals so far this season. He's on pace to have way more than last year. And at the end of last year, he was playing a little bit better in the playoffs. I was a little surprised by how well he played then, just because throughout the last regular season, I was thinking, all right, like this is not a good contract for us. But wow, this year starts.
It's not as bad.
It's not as bad. Like we'll live with it. And he started this year off pretty well. And like I saw the fans on Twitter saying, you know, maybe we should try Lee on the first line. And I'm like, oh my God, we've seen this movie like 30 times, like no shot. But wow, he has definitely been a pleasant surprise. And I'll even point it out, like, so the Islanders were playing the Oilers last week, and it was, I believe it was the 1-1 goal early in the third. Lee's on the ice with Pageau and Horvat. The Oilers in that game had the Islanders just flustered, like McDavid and Draisaitl flying around. Like it was absolute chaos. And Lee makes a decision in his own zone. He has the puck and he just ices it for no reason. And it was just such a bad play. The Oilers go back, they score, they make it 2-1. And I'm a little annoyed at Anders Lee. And then next thing you know, it's 3-1 because we got our fourth line, which we'll get into on the ice. And, you know, like I was thinking, all right, like that's the first bad play Lee's made this year. And then the guy scores 2 goals, ties the game. We go to overtime. We lose. that was not a pretty game by us at all. But wow, Lee really dug deep there and got us a point. So everything he touches is turning to gold in the offensive zone right now.
He still does make those boneheaded plays, like what you mentioned, Jack, about like a pointless icing that then leads to a goal. Like that still is there, but he's actually making it up with his offense, which has been a pleasant surprise. And I mean, him and Siplikov, honestly, have been carrying this team. And I guess Palmieri as well have been carrying this team. Pajot, yeah. Horvat has been a beast on this road trip. Like the guys that you need to really step up that are getting paid are actually stepping up and filling the void for Barzal and Duclair. So that's been good to see. I've been surprised by that.
Am I like off base here? Because there are weirdly a lot of positives about this team right now, and yet they still are on the outside looking in. It's like we're basically like a quarter way through the season, and I'm already looking at games in hand in order to see how far down they actually are in the standings. And again, this goes back to I think it was the Penguins game where everyone's talking about, oh man, like what a comeback. Like maybe they can survive all these. It's like, okay. And then a week later, we're getting all these notices about how the Penguins are literally just giving up on the season. They're selling everyone. They're like, I don't.
We broke them.
I'm very much not in the Islanders or back camp. And I'm not yet in the camp of they're treading enough water, because I don't think these guys are going to be back until the end of December. Like we're talking about another month, I think.
Yeah. So two things, and then I'll give it over to Jack. So like everyone thinks they're back after they come back and beat the Penguins, and they have a good road win in Ottawa, and then Saturday comes around, and
let's hold our horses, Mr. Anthony Beauvillier on the first line. You're celebrating, taking victory laps.
I wasn't. I was definitely, most certainly not doing that. Although they did win a shootout, which I mean, incredible in its own right. But whatever. You feel good about them is my point. And then Saturday comes around and they're up 3-1 against the Devils with 6 minutes left. And then in classic Islander fashion, they give up two goals and then lose in overtime. So it's like you see both sides of it. And I'm with you, Ethan. I just don't, like, I'm checking the standings every day, and I just don't know how they're going to do it with this. And so I want to get to my take in a second, but Jack, I want to see if you have any thoughts on like kind of the yin and yang from the Islanders over the last week and a half.
Yeah, so the Islanders in that Penguins game, so they are in the third period with 11 minutes left. They're down 3-1 at home. Isaiah George is making his NHL debut. We have no idea if this kid is going to survive like three games in the league right now. We have Pelech hurt. We have Barzal hurt. We have Riley hurt, so many injuries, Duclair. And you're just thinking like, all right, we're about to be what, like 4-7. And we got Ottawa and New Jersey coming up, who were both playing well at the time. And I was just kind of thinking to myself like, oh boy, this could really be a disaster. We hadn't seen them come back in the third period yet this year. And out of nowhere, Simon Holmstrom decides to put the puck in the net. Next thing you know, Pajot scores, and then we win in a shootout. And then we go to Ottawa. Isaiah George starts playing really well, like dashing back to his own end after being behind the net. Like he's making really good plays out there. I'm very inspired by what I see with them right now. I figured like, all right, all these guys are injured. They have every excuse to lose. And suddenly they're playing harder. They're playing smarter and they just look better. And another reason I'm surprised by it is because after the game in late October where Waugh wasn't made available to the media, and after the game he was implying that Lou made him call up some players. I was thinking, all right, like this culture, this room might be a little bit broken, but then you see the way they're playing through the adversity and it just gives me faith that it's still there. And especially like watching how disastrous of organization, for example, like the Jets are, New York Jets, my favorite football team. Like you can just see the difference.
Unlike the Winnipeg Jets, the very successful Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah.
The Jets who have more wins in the state of New York and / New Jersey than the New York Jets. Yeah.
I just appreciate like the stability I see in these players. And suddenly, you know, like they found something. Like when I saw Pajot on the first line, I was like, oh shit. Like just we're throwing anything at the wall right now to see if it works. And it worked. And now like they're, I think they're at 500 and now like they're just going to get healthier. And suddenly George being a good player really gives the defense a little more depth that I did not see coming. And it's just the most ideal situation. You didn't have to trade anything. You didn't have to pay a bad contract. Like, this is how it's supposed to work. You're supposed to have prospects ready to come up. And it's just been a pleasure to see.
100%. And so I'll give an injury update in a second because Lou did speak today and he had some updates on some of the Islanders. But you brought up the Jets and that actually leads into my take. So I've been thinking about this for like two and a half weeks and I want to get your guys' thoughts. Really, Ethan, who's the Giants fan here, because there is, to me, a similarity between the Islanders and the New York Giants. And bear with me for a second, because...
Yeah, you're going to need to flush this one out a little bit.
Yeah, so this is kind of where I'm thinking. Like, the Islanders are playing right now with their decimated roster about as well as you can possibly hope for them to play with in this current state. Now, they're not going to go on some crazy win streak, but they are picking up points. They're doing as well as they can. And when I look at the New York Giants, who have, as we know, a very shitty roster, I think the Giants are doing pretty much the best that they possibly can, being held back by a quarterback. Now, obviously, there are two completely different situations, two different sports, but I see a team that's well coached and a coach doing all he can do to get his team to perform as best as they can. And that's exactly what the Islanders are doing, playing to the best of their capability. And the Giants are a team that, if they probably had decent quarterback play, would be playing better than they can, but the rest of the roster is doing almost as well as they possibly can. Now, you're obviously the Giants guy on here, and you're looking at me like I'm fucking insane. So
yep.
Go ahead and give me your brief thoughts. I've been thinking about this for like 2.5 weeks. I think I'm a genius, but clearly you think I'm an idiot.
I mean, I just think that's... Greeny, I'd never call you an idiot.
Okay.
I would never do that.
Only over text.
Well, let's not expose the text messages here. There's such a large talent disparity. I think very much, I still very much believe that Wah and Lou were or may not still fully be on the same page when it comes to roster decisions, whereas Dable and Shane very clearly are. Especially when it comes to the Jones contract.
Like, it's for different reasons. It's completely for different reasons. I'm just saying, like, not a great roster, playing as well as they possibly can, being held back by certain areas.
I don't know.
I love how we're comparing the Islanders
whatever.
To shitty football teams to make ourselves feel good.
It really should be the Jets. not meeting expectations.
Sure, except... The Islanders were not expected to win a Stanley Cup like the Jets. According to Jack, we're like going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but so.
I don't think I ever said that.
The Jets are being held back by a leader who's far too old and mentally far gone, as are the Islanders, if you were to ask Greeny.
All right, well, I'll scrap my take. Screw that. Let me give you guys the injury updates.
Not a bad one, just overthought, but keep going.
That's fair. I'll give you guys the injury updates, and I actually want to get your thoughts on some of the guys that have come in as replacements. Like Isaiah George, who Jack touched on before, because I think he's been a good surprise. But before we get to that, Lou did speak today, and there were some interesting updates, specifically with Mike Riley. So we'll start with that. Mike Riley is going to be out indefinitely. They discovered a heart condition that's completely unrelated to his concussion. They found it during his concussion tests, and so he's going to undergo heart surgery, I believe this week, and he should make a full recovery. He should also be able to resume his hockey career if he chooses to. But Lou is unsure if he's going to be able to be back this year. It's going to be a, you know, kind of a month by month thing. So that was a little bit of a scary.
The people's insider was caught off guard.
Yeah, which is rare.
I mean, this must have been something not just kept very well under wraps, but also fairly recently, because I think the last update I gave on the last podcast was that Mike Riley was going to be back sooner than people expected. And again, I don't think that was wrong because Lou announced that he passed concussion protocol. So, I mean, I had not heard about any heart condition, scary stuff. And also it's a little bit bizarre because Lou made it seem like a birth defect that something people are born with. And for them to just catch it when he's, how old is he? 20,
Is he in his 20s? I think he's in his 30s, actually.
He's in his 30s? Okay.
I'll look it up.
Even worse, but, you know, you'd hope
31.
That,
he's 31.
31. You'd hope that a team doctor would catch that during some sort of exam, but I'm glad they caught it, and I hope for a speedy recovery.
Me too. Don't really care about the hockey part for him right now. Just hope surgery goes well and he'll be okay.
And more playing time for the kids. So
exactly. More for the kids. So anyone that was concerned about Isaiah George maybe not staying up here, well, I think you don't have to be concerned anymore, at least going forward. Now, the other updates, a lot of this we kind of knew thanks to the People's Insider. But as far as the rest of the injured players, Alex Romanov is probably the closest to returning. He's still day to day. He's going to be a game time decision.
Yeah, on him, it's what I've heard is that it's a pain tolerance issue and a strength issue. Medically, he is cleared, and that's evident by the no contact or the regular jersey, not the no contact jersey. But if he feels he can go, he's going to go. So we'll see. I retracted my People's Insider report that he would be ready for the Calgary game. Seems like that timeline was pretty spot on, but it's still up in the air whether or not he'll play there or they're just going to wait another game or two.
Well, he was skating, actually. Sorry to cut you off, Jack. No, like this morning, he was skating. He was skating in the regular D rotation. Yeah. I don't know if he's been doing that before, but that could potentially be a good sign.
Yeah. Good sign. But again, he's never was too far off. It was always a pain tolerance thing. So hopefully he'll be a good go for Calgary.
Absolutely. And then, Jack, you want to jump in?
I just kind of wanted to jump in on this defense and talk about like some individuals, give my little opinion here. So with the last game in Seattle, the time on ice was Pulock 24-38, Dobson 23-03. Mayfield 21-37, George 18-40, Hutton 15-28, Chalowski 14-03. Chalowski finished the game a plus one with an assist. Hutton was zeros across the board with a shot on goal. And I just want to give a quick shout out to Hutton and Chalowski. These guys are career AHL players, and they're not great. It's not 2019 Pelech and Pulock. I'm not sure how the fan base really feels about them, but the fact that they can come in and log, you know, 15 minutes of ice time and they're not a complete liability out there, like, I take that as a win. I think that looks really good for our coaching staff. And I just feel like those guys have really held their own and I'm happy for them. Hope it continues. I know that one of them is going to be pulled tomorrow. I believe it's Hutton, which isn't surprising because Chalowski made the team out of camp. And one more guy I want to touch on is Mayfield. Mayfield has been logging an absurd amount of minutes with these injuries. And I feel like Mayfield's a player that this fan base loves to pile on. And the other day in Seattle, he plays a great game, but of course we take a 2-1 lead. He makes a mental mistake on a Seattle zone entry and McCann rips one right past Sorokin. And it's just so unfortunate how that happens because there's just no room for error right now. And one mistake can end up in the back of our net. And it's just so hard for everyone to come together with these injuries and just overcome things like that. But I do want to say he's been playing a ton of minutes. I think he's played pretty well for the most part. If he's going to make a mistake or two, you have to understand it's because he's playing so many minutes. When he goes back to his third pairing role, I really think he's been a good player for us this season.
And he's also playing with Ryan Pulock, so it's a righty-righty pair, which can create some awkward zone exits because both of them can't be on their strong side at the same time, obviously. But I agree, he's been really, really good. And as far as Chalowski and Hutton go, I have noticed that they've gotten better with each game, which I think is a credit to the coaching staff. At first, they came in there and it was like, oh my God, here we go again. But I think Chalowski has gotten a lot better. He's been a lot more confident with the puck, and Hutton as well. Like, I don't think they've really made too many glaring mistakes in the defensive zone. So I think a lot of credit has to go to Patrick Roy and the rest of the staff.
100%. Again, it makes you wonder what's going on in Connecticut, in Bridgeport. What's going on with these guys? They come up here, they're with Patrick Roy. It's like they're automatically better. What's going on, Bridgeport? Don't make me start digging, Bridgeport.
Question on Bridgeport. Was George, do I remember this correctly? Was George scratched for like multiple games this season in Bridgeport for performance, or is that not true? I can't remember.
Great question. I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure. No idea.
I'm pretty sure he was scratched at some points, and it really makes you scratch your head, doesn't it? Because this kid's been pretty good for us. Yeah, he makes some mistakes here and there, but more times than not, he's able to skate his way back into position. It's very refreshing to watch.
But also, who the hell does Bridgeport have that they're scratching him?
It's ridiculous.
That doesn't make any sense either. So I have no idea, but positive signs. And then last couple injury updates here. So Anthony Duclair has not resumed skating yet. He's hopeful that he'll start skating in the near future, but nothing there. And then Barzell and Pelic, both of them are going to start skating as soon as they've been cleared by doctors. But of course, Lou doesn't know when that's going to happen. But I think, Ethan, you've been pretty solid on these timelines. We kind of knew it was going to be on the longer side.
Yeah, I never fully bought into the 4 to 6. It was always going to be towards the end of that timeline, if maybe even closer to 6 to 8.
Do we think by New Year's, maybe?
Yes.
Okay, well
I'm more confident on
that's
Barzal
solid
than I am
then.
Duclair, just because groin injuries are tricky, and Barzal's gotten upper body, as they like to say.
This has been the most positive
I am curious.
podcast we've
I will
had.
do some digging to see if Barzal got surgery. I'll say he broke something. So I'm curious if it was a surgical repair or they just let it heal.
So this actually brings up an interesting question for you guys. And we got a bunch of questions about this, but I've also been kind of feeling out Isles Twitter. The consensus, a lot of people are like, when these guys come back, do we want to break up the first line? Horvat, Pajot, and I'm completely blanking. Someone help me out.
Lee.
Anders. Yeah,
Yeah,
Anders. Yeah.
Lee.
So when these guys come back, do we want to break up the first line? How do you guys see the line shaking out? I have my thoughts, but I want to hear what you guys think.
It's a really good question. For so many years, I feel like the Islanders have really struggled to have two lines clicking at the same time. Like it's always been either it's the Nelson, Palmieri, and it was Engvall for a while, and now it's Siplikov, and they're just the only line that's consistently running. They've been the only one out of the last few years that are always running well. And we've always been looking for this for more like firepower offensively. And I just don't see how you can break up that first line right now. And it's pretty easy to think of the candidates who are going to get scratched when everyone's healthy. You got to scratch Martin, obviously, first. And Fashing, for whatever reason, is so far in the doghouse. Like, it doesn't look like this guy's going to see the ice until there's a glaring, glaring mistake. We'll get on the fourth line later, but I think the third line, I think Barzell maybe moves back to a center. And I don't think it's going to really be like a third line role. I think it's going to be more of like, we're just playing all these guys evenly. I think him and Duclair will go there. And I'd actually put Engvall with them. And I'd keep McLean on the fourth line, and I'd put Holmstrom on the fourth line left wing. And
With Cizikas.
who would go right there? Oh yes, Cizikas can go to the fourth line. He's been one of the few downsides for me, even through the last few games. I'm just not seeing it from him this season. Like you'll see flashes of Casey getting in on the forecheck and playing his game, but it just doesn't feel or look the same this season.
My answer is I don't know. I don't
A
know.
rare insider being stumped.
Well, it's not even an insider thing. It's just I have no opinion on what you do with these guys. My gut says you just go back to Horvat, Barzal, Duclair, and that was the plan. I don't think they looked too terrible. I think they needed a little bit more time to click. And I objectively think that they're your fastest, most skilled players. They should be your top line. They should be together. And I don't know. We'll see. But if you had gun to head, I'm putting them back on the top line.
100%.
The weird thing is when they were playing together, all the analytics guys were saying that they had a very like good XGF, I think, expected goals percentage, but the shooting percentage was just like horrifically down, and it was like a product of just some like really bad
Yeah, I mean,
luck.
Barzal was, people I feel like are forgetting, he was terrible
He
for
had
the start of
no
the season.
point. He had no points at 5-on-5. Like
Yeah,
obviously that
exactly.
wasn't going to continue.
Right.
He was getting very unlucky, but he had a very, very low shooting percentage.
I just don't want them to break up something that works. So it is a really challenging idea to think of right now.
I just don't know. Again, and this is probably just because I'm I don't buy into what Anders Lee is currently doing. So like, I don't trust him to keep this level the entire time. Maybe you stick with this at the beginning and then it goes dry for, you know, a game or two, and then you load up the top line. But I think we can get to the fourth line in a second, because that to me is the biggest issue with this team, because they're actually a pretty good 5-on-5 team. Special teams is a mess, but 5-on-5, they're actually pretty good. And Matt Martin, I love the guy, but I mean, he can't be playing. The fourth line is not playable. And Patrick Waugh is only playing them like 4 or 5 minutes. Like it's really, really bad. So they need a solution.
Stefan had an insane tweet today. I'm pulling it up, of the numbers where they're outchanced, outshot.
It
was like to one. It was like whatever number it was to one.
Yeah. I mean, like you look up and when the Islanders are pinned in the defensive zone, you can pretty much close your eyes and guess that it's going to be Martin, McLean, and
you ready?
Cizikas? I don't even know. Let's hear it.
All right. So the Islanders, shout out to Stefan Rosner. Islanders current fourth line has been outchanced 17-1, outshot 16-5, and somehow only outscored 2-1 in 25 minutes of ice time. In Seattle, 4 minutes. Canucks, 4 minutes, 52 seconds. Oilers, 5 minutes, 43 seconds. Panthers, 8 minutes, 24 seconds.
And again, we're not talking about, I mean, some of those teams are good, but like the recent schedule, and we're not exactly talking about a gauntlet of opponents here. Like Seattle's not good. The Oilers don't look great to start the season. Like, the Canucks are good, but it's just not even against that top tier, you know?
No, it's a complete disaster. I don't understand why it looks that bad. Like McLean played really well last season. The whole thing is just confusing to me. I understand Martin shouldn't be playing. They still have yet to. So they've replaced Fasching with Wahlstrom. Reverse, but they need to switch Martin with Fasching and do Fasching, McLean, and Wahlstrom and just see what it looks like. That's what I want to see happen, but I don't know if that's ever going to. It's crazy.
It really is a mystery, because we were all on the same page when they signed him that it kind of came out of left field, but we didn't think that he was really going to play that much. It's the fact that he's almost going to hit his incentive. I think he's like a 10 games played incentive to get like even more money. He's going to hit that like next week.
This staff and the management, they absolutely love Matt Martin. And if this team wins a game or
I would say management loves Matt Martin.
Yeah, not the staff.
I don't know about the staff.
The quotes from Law on Martin are pretty crazy sometimes.
I'm sure he's a great dude. I'm sure he's so nice. You know, like he does charity. He's a staple of the community. He's going to retire an Islander. I'm sure he's a lovely guy.
Yeah, if they gave Stanley Cups for friendship, we'd have a modern day dynasty.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah. I feel like if they're in a game, unless they get blown out or unless the fourth line makes a glaring mistake, they're just going to use any excuse to keep playing Martin. And, you know, they got outscored 2-1. You have to remember one of those goals I just remembered. The refs missed a clear trip on Oliver Wahlstrom and McDavid ended up scoring in the Oilers game. It was at the blue line that trip. So the staff probably thinks, oh, like that's not their fault. Like that's just a missed call. But at the end of the day, this line by the eye test has just been brutal.
100%. Well, I got a couple other topics for you guys. One of them that's been driving me nuts, and I think it's probably been driving all of us nuts for years, has been the special teams. So currently, I just looked it up. The Islanders' penalty kill is 29th in the NHL at 69.2%. And their power play is 31st in the NHL. And I believe, if I double check the percentage, I believe they're at 11%. No, they're at 13%. Now, the power play has some sort of an excuse because Barzal and Duclair are not here. But why can't this team play 4-on-5 and 5-on-4 every year? Someone please help. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. They've changed coaches. It doesn't really matter. Someone explain to me.
I want to give credit to the coaching staff for putting Pageau with Horvat and Lee, and the lines of the third line too has looked fantastic with Holmstrom, Cizikas, and Engvall. But this one thing, you just can't get past it. The special teams have to be better. It's like you want to give credit to the coaching staff, but you can't because this is still a problem. And I wonder, like, McLean is still the power play coach. I think that's the only coach from last season that's still there, from the beginning of last season that's still there. And I don't know. Like, I don't know how they kept him. I was positive that he wasn't going to be back, but I maybe
coach's son, player's father.
Yeah.
I guess the fact that his son is there, they got to keep him around, which is, it's a great story. The power play fucking sucks. And the penalty kill sucks. The players on the penalty kill, I mean, Cizikas hasn't looked good on it. When Pageau and Holmstrom are out there, at least like you have a prayer of a shorthanded goal every time. Nelson and Palmieri even scored a shorthanded goal. They get a lot of shorthanded goals, but they also give up way too many.
Butch actually had a hilarious comment on the in the Seattle game, because they were killing a penalty and the PKers on the ice had a complete breakdown and they gave up like a golden opportunity right in the slot and someone on Seattle missed the net. And Butch was like, that was actually a much better job by the Islanders. They were looking a lot better on that penalty kill. And I'm like, the guy just missed the net from point blank. Like, that's how low the bar is. And I don't know. I really don't know.
No, I mean, the PK, they just don't have good team speed. I think it's really that simple. Like, you can't, like, the most effective PKs in the league are the ones that are aggressive and that implement a chase style. They don't have the foot speed for that.
And on the power play, I think it's a similar thing. I've had this issue with the power play for years. I think the five guys on the ice stand too far apart from each other, where it's so easy to get into passing lanes, and they can't make quick passes. So everything is slow and around the perimeter, and there's just no, it doesn't allow any kind of creativity. It's just very, very predictable. And
With no Barzal, there's no one for Noah Dobson to just mooch points off of.
Well, I don't even know. You're right. I'm not even going to say what I'm going to say. You're just 100% right. Yeah, you're 100% right. He's filled the Josh Bailey secondary assist role. Sorry, Jack.
We'll take it.
Well, before we get into questions, I guess, there's one other thing that I want to bring up, because our guy Phil, who I know is listening, is doing his typical trolling self.
Mr. Fax?
Yeah, Mr. Fax, who incredibly is going after Ilya Sorokin's performance over the last couple of days because he's been giving up 3 goals or 4 goals a night. And I sit there and I watch every Islander game, and if Ilya Sorokin was not in net, the Islanders probably have lost all of these games the last week and a half by like 5 or 6 goals. He's been incredible this entire year. And so I think cherry picking Ilya and just the goaltending in general is insane. And I know that Phil likes to troll people, but like, this is crazy. Of all the things to say, that's insane.
Jack, yeah, you go.
Yeah, my take on it is actually quite surprising. I had to yell at Phil for this one a little bit.
Because you're Ilya's biggest hater on this pod.
Yeah, like I'm not like the biggest Sorokin fan, but the guy had back surgery. He missed a ton of training camp and, you know, he's played pretty well his first 11 games. He hasn't been elite, but he's been pretty good. Like he's not given up soft goals left and right. Like I think he stepped up and played pretty well. However, there's one thing I understand with Phil here. So the other day in Seattle, it's 2-1 Islanders. Mayfield has that blunder and McCann takes the shot and it rips right by Sorokin. And then later in the third, like they get another goal. And one out of two of those could have been stopped, could have. And you're paying money for an elite goalie. And on the other hand, it's 3-2. Now it's 3-2. Nelson has a breakaway and Decord comes up with the stop. So Decord came up with the big save when he had to, and Sorokin didn't. But I still can't get there and blaming Sorokin right now, because they couldn't get the puck out of the zone on that third goal. They had a big mental mistake. Yeah, Sorokin didn't make the big save, but he's still working his way back. Like, I just can't. I think he's played pretty well, and they need to keep splitting up the time between him and Varlamov and just keep letting him get his feet wet. And I think eventually he's going to take off. I like what I've seen from him so far, and I think Phil needs to be a little more patient on that one. He could prove to be right, but he doesn't want to be right on this one.
Yeah, I think much like a lot of things that people on Isles Twitter like to do, they like to debate. A lot of people just like to hear themselves talk, or they like the clickety clack of their keyboard or their phone, whatever it is, and they just like to talk about nothing. It really is. You know what? Islanders Twitter is like the Seinfeld of sports Twitter, because people will just argue like threads. Like, you see a 50 tweet thread of like the same three guys going back and forth
for weeks,
for yeah, like multiple days. And then you like start to read it and you're like, these guys are arguing about nothing. Like, they're not saying anything. And I think with the Ilya Sorokin argument, it's really simple. You're paying for elite. You want elite. He's been good to very good. You want elite. I get it. Let's give the guy the rest of the season. That's it.
Yeah, you know, certain people just spend their time arguing about the parking situation at UBS.
That's fine.
Some people do that.
Yeah, I'm not naming names here.
And I will say, I went to Frozen on Ice at UBS this past weekend. The parking situation, great. No complaints.
Yeah. And it was probably the one time you left UBS in a good mood.
No, actually. The similarities between Disney on Ice and the Islanders were quite striking. We mostly because we had to leave early because a member of my family had a temper tantrum. So again, Islanders game, Disney on Ice.
Been there.
Someone's leaving early because of a temper tantrum. You know, it's one and the same in my book.
That's unbelievable. I mean, yeah, the other thing I'll say about Sorokin is I feel like there's this weird dynamic similar to like the Thomas Greiss, Varley dynamic, Thomas Greiss, Leonard dynamic, where the team seems to play better when Varlamov's in net than when Sorokin's in net. I feel like when Varley's playing, they're a lot more defensively sound. And I mean, I'm not making an excuse for Ilya. He still lets in a couple of soft goals that he needs to stop. But I think that he is called upon to bail out the team way more than Varlamov is. And I mean, coming off of the surgery that he had in the offseason, I think he's performed better than any of us probably figured, even me and Rocco being the two Ilya supporters on this podcast. I think it's been a great surprise. So hopefully that continues, and hopefully we can satisfy Phil, or Ilya can satisfy Phil, so we don't have to put up with the trolling. So now I think we've reached the part of the podcast, unless you guys have anything else you want to bring up or discuss, where we can run some questions.
Let's do it.
All right. So again, thank you to everybody that responded, put in some questions. I'm going to pick some good ones, so bear with me. So where should we start here? Okay, so we're going to go to a loyal listener, Mike, at Dino Dangle, who reached out and said, do you think that if Brock Nelson and Kyle Palmieri leave, that Shabanov and a UFA signing like Marner, Rantanen, or Ehlers would be better than bringing back Nelson and Palmieri? I think we've learned this year that splitting up Horvat and Barzal can work if other guys play well. I don't know who Shabanov is. I think he's just another Russian phenom that's going to come over.
He's the next Siplikov.
So do you think the Russian kid and then signing one of Marner, Rantanen, or Ehlers, if possible, would be better than just bringing back Brock and Palmieri?
Probably yes, but I don't know enough about this Russian guy. The other players that are listed, obviously yes, just due to age. So, yeah, I'm with that. Just because of age and money at that point, like, you just have to make smart decisions. So you have to be logical and just kind of assume, given all of the data out there, that Nelson and Palmieri's best days are going to be behind them pretty soon.
Ethan?
Can you repeat the question? I just had my fantasy season ended by Joe Mixon.
R.I.P. Yes, the question was, if Brock Nelson and Palmieri leave, or if they choose to let them go, do you think they'd be better off signing the Russian kid Shabanov and a UFA like a Marner, Rantanen, or Ehlers instead? Yes,
absolutely.
I think we're going down this path anyway, not with the UFAs. I think that Nelson and Palmieri are both going to be gone after the season ends, like, to begin with. I know some people think maybe Palmieri will be back. I think they're going to let both of them go. And yes, simply because of the age, sign me up for that any day of the week. Plus the fact that the salary cap is probably going to go up. Very interesting article today in The Athletic that with the CBA, the new CBA coming to an end soon, and the player's escrow being paid off in full, the salary cap could go up another like $7 or $8 million and could end up being in the mid-90s next year, which would be insane. So
I'll believe it when I see it.
That's fair.
Me too.
All right. Next question. I'm about, or this is from someone who doesn't have a username. The handle is EJK612. I'm about two or three more useless Kyle MacLean games away from thinking last year was a fluke, and there's a reason that he was undrafted. Your guys' thoughts?
Yeah, with this one, I've had the same thoughts, actually, but then I really look at it, and I take a second to look who he's playing with. He's playing with Wahlstrom and Martin. So I get it. I get the frustration. Like, you would hope that somehow he could drive this line and they could be somewhat decent, but these guys next to him are just not helping. And I need to see him with different line mates before I jump to that conclusion. But I don't blame you. It just hasn't been good enough so far from him.
I'll ride with Jack. I'm so furious right now.
All right, so the fantasy loser is going to sit out for a second. We're out on Kyle MacLean. I don't really know what to say about Kyle MacLean. I think he probably has the Hudson Fashing disease of playing one really good year, getting a contract, and then just being average.
I don't think so. I think it's the line mates.
I mean, it could be, but like, who was he playing with last year? Like, it wasn't like he was playing with some great guys a year before.
It was Clutterbuck and Martin, so yeah, I don't know. Time will tell with him.
For sure. I mean, I'm not going to write him off yet, but
that is a good point.
I do need to see a little bit more from him because there really just hasn't been a lot there, honestly, from the whole bottom six. We talked about that. Next question is from Ian. Ian_10_19. The Athletic listed Noah Dobson, Romanov, and Siplikov as possible offer sheet targets for other teams. Do you think there's any chance that there's an offer sheet out there for any of them? And he gave some projections that The Athletic had. Siplikov was $4.8 million for a second-round pick. Romanov was $7.2 for a first and a third. And Dobson was $9.6 for two firsts, absolutely a second, and
not.
A third.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go.
Also, no one's going to dare offer sheet Lou. Like, who are you kidding?
That's what I was thinking. Like, Lou Lamoriello with, like, these under-the-table or sketchy sort of deals. Like, he's not letting any of that happen. He's got all the angles covered, I bet. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I think I'll go with, I think, Ethan, you mentioned this on the last podcast that you did with Rocco. If someone offer sheeted him, there'd probably be a black van outside of that GM's home, and there might be some mafia members. So no one's going to dare do that to Lou. I mean, it's not a terrible question, but I don't see it happening. Also, side note, Noah Dobson's not getting $10 million.
Also, these guys are just not good.
Well, Siplikov's good.
Okay, yeah, Siplikov's good.
And you, since you brought it up, can you explain to the people your problem with Alex Romanov? I think you hate him unnecessarily.
I just think there's no offensive upside, like zero. And for a guy who's supposed to be like this big bopper, he lays like one big hit every 20 games.
But he's also a very defensively responsible person.
Is he, though?
Like, when he's on the ice, I'm more confident in him than I am in Adam Pellick and Mike Riley when he plays.
Again, dude, we got to raise our standards. This is the problem.
I mean, we argue about this another time.
Yeah, that's fine. It's
fine. Fair. Okay. The standard's the standard. All right. One more question. This is a fun one. Shout out Rob Taub, who is probably joking with this question, but I still think it's a fun question. Who do you think is the new whipping boy for Isles Twitter? Haven't had one of those.
It's a tough one because Lee would have been the guy, but he's played his way out of it.
Dobson, Cizikas?
Dobson, there's a lot of people who go at him, but there's also another part where there's a lot of Dobson defenders out there that are constantly saying we're being too hard on him. He's 24. He's playing a lot of minutes. It's actually a good question. And then you have some Sorokin guys out there.
I think it's Engvall.
I think it's Mayfield.
also an interesting one. Also a very interesting one. I don't know. I thought that was just a funny question. And I'm also wondering if Matt Martin continues to play, is the fan base going to begin to turn on him? Because everyone loves him, but
that's ever
going to
happen.
I hope not. I love the guy, but like it'll
never happen. That won't happen. I think it's Mayfield, and I think it's because people just cannot stop looking at his contract.
It's the contract.
And are not watching the games. Like, the guy really has been playing well for the role that he's put in. And even Engvall recently, he's actually been playing really well. And Patrick Waugh coached him up a little bit. He's darting to the net. He's playing in front of the net. He's driving the puck to the net. He's playing aggressive. It's really a pleasure to see. I hope it continues. And to see him motivated on November 18th, credit to Patrick Waugh on that one.
All right.
So my whipping boy that I think it's Mayfield, by the way, ultimately.
That's fair. I have one last question, and this is from me. And I got this from watching the Seattle game. So there's a lot of arguments on Isles Twitter about the goalie interference on the third goal for Seattle. This has been driving me nuts across the NHL for so long because no one knows what the hell goalie interference is. How do you guys feel about the NHL bringing back a rule where if a person is in the goal crease, it's automatically wiped out? Like, that's just it's just not allowed to be in the blue paint. I think that's the only way to fix this problem.
I agree. I really do, because it's too subjective, the rule right now. Just for the record, the other day, I did not think that was goaltender interference. I do like the challenge, though. I mean, you may as well try it. We were probably going to lose the game anyway. Hell, we had a breakaway after that and didn't score. But
I actually thought it was interference. Like, if the Islanders scored that goal, you know that goal was not counting.
Yeah, because
it's like us. You 100% know that. And there's just no...
I hate that the rooms in Toronto, it always gives me a bad feeling. I really do. I know it's probably ridiculous, but
I'm on your side, Jack.
Yeah, those guys.
Well, I mean, because when the Situation Room tweeted out their explanation, a bunch of non-Islander fans like responded to the tweet with a video of like a goal last week from the Capitals Toronto game where there was no contact whatsoever, and they took it back, and of course the Leafs were involved, so people had their theories.
This is bullshit, man. We got to get this room. We got to get this room in New York, like other sports, or I don't care. Put it in LA. Like, it's got to get out of Toronto. Those guys are up to something over there.
Yeah, between that and the offside.
I don't like your rule, Greeny, by the way.
Why not?
Because if the puck is loose in the crease and like the goalie is struggling to cover it, like, you got to be able to crash the net.
Yeah.
No, but your skates don't have to be in there. Your stick can be in there. Your skates don't have to be.
I think that area is bigger than you're giving it credit for, especially if you're getting hit from like by a defenseman. It just gets too messy. I don't know.
But so like
I agree with you. The rule needs to be fixed. I just don't know what the solution is.
No, you're so right about
that. It's a fair argument.
If the fucking goal was scored by us, there's no way it counts. Like, we know it. There's just no way. Like, that goal a few years ago against Carolina,
the high stick.
What? That would never happen for us. That's fucking insane.
Well, and also the offside when they played Pittsburgh, where the guy was getting off, he was changing on Pittsburgh, and he was literally in the offensive zone, and and they said that his skates weren't on the ice when, like, there's video evidence of the guy's skates on the ice. It's like
a fucking joke, dude.
What are we doing here?
I was at that game, so I couldn't really tell. So I'm glad I didn't know. It's just better when I don't know.
When Brendan is baffled on the TV broadcast about something, that's when you know it's bad, because he plays it down the middle.
He does,
But yeah, I needed to get that off my chest because that pissed me off. Yeah, that's pretty much all I got, unless you guys have anything else.
No, that's it. We're good.
Good for me.
We'll be back next week.
Full squad is back next week.
Yes, thanks for listening, guys.
All right, Ethan, lead us out.
Oh,
don't all right, all right, fine.
Follow us on Isles, at Isles House on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Jack at Isles Den. Follow Greeny at eGreenberg99.
Nice
follow
job. Follow
Rocco at Pizza Sports Guy. And that's it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you guys.
Father wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep. He can't hang around.
Io's house in the middle of our street. Io's house.